And Robin, I didn't mean to wear this shirt while I'm talking to you, but it's One Mississippi. One Mississippi. Yay. This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro, and you clearly can't follow directions. Here to help me today is the incredible Robin Roberts. You know her from Good Morning America and from ESPN. I know her from... How do I know you? Do you know how we met?
We were, first of all, Tig, thank you very much. And I cannot wait to impart my vast knowledge and advice on those who will be listening. But going back, I mean, how many people are from past Christian, Mississippi? And I had so many people that were reaching out to me because about you before I met you because of the similarities. You were going through a health crisis the same time I was. Our mothers passed away about almost the same time.
Yeah.
And I was like, who's the Tig? Well, first of all, Tig, what Tig? And then we just kind of... it aligned, and I'm so pleased.
Me too. It pays off every time I see you or talk to you. But I really was. How do I know this person? I don't know where it began, but we were kind of blown away at the similarities. It's ridiculous.
Who knew?
We didn't. We still don't.
Obviously.
Now, since this is an advice podcast, what is your best piece of Mississippi advice you've ever received?
Oh, the best piece of Mississippi advice. I remember when my mom, she wanted a pickup truck. And my dad said, when you ask for a pickup truck, it means you've been too far south too long. I remember that. I remember really, and everything's going to go back to mommyisms. My mom gave me the best piece of, and you could say Mississippi advice or parental advice or whatever, but it's really stayed with me. But I can remember being in our home in the past. I'm in high school. I think I'm all that in a bag of chips.
And the pass is what locals call Pass Christian, our hometown. Yeah,
we affectionately call it the pass.
The pass.
And I'm about to go out, and it's like my mom knew I was going to do something. It's like, I don't know how. You're a parent. You kind of just know.
Yeah.
And I will never forget, I was about, that my hand was on the door going out, and all she said was, Robin Renee, you know right from wrong. That was it.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, that night we were about to do something wrong. And I'm like, oh, I know the difference between right and wrong. Sorry, guys, I got to go home.
Really?
And that really served me so well to know the difference between right and wrong.
Just knowing you as I do, and probably as the rest of the world knows you, I can't even imagine what wrong you are possibly going to do.
You know, well, it was Mississippi wrong in high school. As youth, we just feel that we're invincible and that we can do and say and whatnot. And I was one of those. I wasn't the polished person that people now see on Good Morning America. But back in the day, I was like everybody else just trying to figure it out.
I know. It really terrifies me when I think of the invincible element of growing up. It terrifies me, especially having two children. And I hate to sound like a big cliche, but it terrifies me because I really was doing dangerous things. And
do tell. You wanted me to tell. What was the dangerous thing that you were doing,
Robin? It is so.
What your child to your children to repeat.
We'll have to edit this out because I do not want my child or any other child to do what I was doing, Robin. It is so dangerous. My friend and I would drive on I-10 to Louisiana to go to her grandmother's house for Shrimp Fest. And, you know, you get on I-10 and it's just nothing but swamps that you're going over forever. And I would...
Hey,
No, I'm not kidding.
How are you still with us to this day and your friend?
I don't know. And that's like one of many things we did.
Wow.
Well, now I just did an episode of Turning the Tables with Robin Roberts, which was a lot of fun. And we talked about this on the show, but we kind of talked about it. My question is more of how do you remain upbeat very early in the morning? But it reminds me of also when I was saying about your kindness and your openness, which is similar but different, because I feel like your chest is just ripped open and just sunshine beaming out of your being.
Well, no, but first of all, I remember when you said that to me and it meant so much, especially coming from somebody who I adore as much as I adore you and respect. It's the athlete in me. When I wanted to be good, you know, I was a state bowling champion in Mississippi when I was 12 years old. I had to practice.
Yeah.
When I, you know, was all state basketball, tennis, I had to practice. And it's the same thing with joy and happiness. You have to get in the habit. You have to practice it. And I shared this with you. I remember my father, and like many of us when we're, you know, coming up, and everybody, I hope you don't ask this of you. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I asked my dad, how should I respond when someone says that? And he said, when somebody asks you, what do you want to be? You tell them you want to be kind. And yes. That took so much pressure off of me. And I was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to be an astronaut or a physicist or a doctor or a lawyer, what everybody was trying to say you should be. I don't know how to do that. But you've taught me, mom and dad, how to be kind. And I have to say that has opened more doors for me without the intent of that being what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that we're in need of, you know, kindness, empathy, not sympathy, but empathy.
Yeah.
I can really empathize with people. I know what it's like to go through the loss of, a loved one. I know what it's like to go to our hometown. Pastor Sham was virtually wiped out by Hurricane Katrina. So when I cover natural disasters now, like I went to Lake Charles not too long ago because people had forgotten about them. And I was like, no, I know what it feels like to feel forgotten. And so it all stems from just that passion and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been the bedrock of who I am.
And do you feel like you wake up with that?
No.
Each day?
You know when I wake up thinking I haven't gotten enough sleep. But I make it a practice. And that's something that I really want people to understand. You have to get in the habit of being joyful, the habit of happiness, the habit. And that is something that has served me well. And I think it's because of the athlete in me that I remembered, like, oh, if I practice, if I put in the time, good things are going to happen. You have to position yourself for good things to happen. Proximity is power.
Yes, I love that. You've, as I have, been very public about your health and your experience with cancer. And do you feel like being public about that has been helpful for you, or...
Vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness.
Yeah.
When you allow yourself to be vulnerable, it was not easy for me, and I'm sure not for you,
mm-mm,
to talk about my illness. It's not something that I wanted to do. My dear mom was like, make your mess your message. And you've done that as well. Make your mess your message. And I remember when I first said to, I was on Good Morning America, it was 2007, was diagnosed with breast cancer, knew I was going to have surgery, the chemo, radiation, and all that. And I was with my dear friend, Diane Sawyer. Oh gosh, talk about the angels that are placed in your life. And Diane Sawyer is one of them. And I was holding her hand as I announced I had breast cancer. And you know, Tig, that night I slept like a baby, because I got it out there and it seemed like I was hiding something from people. And I took control of the narrative. And I'm here to say there are many people that we know that don't want to share their illness. And you know what? More power to them. There's mm-hmm. no rule book. And it's just kind of figuring out what is best for you. And being that I was in the public eye, I thought, okay, this is a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful that I had a platform to hopefully help others who walk a similar path.
I couldn't agree more. And I fully relate. And I struggled to be honest about my own health. And it wasn't until I was, and I agree with what you're saying. If people don't want to be open about their health or whatever it is in their life, that's their business. But I could not believe the shift in my life and my abilities and my relationships. Everything changed in that moment. And I know you helped so many people. So thank you for that. And thank you. Thank you for everything that you do. And thank you in advance for all the advice you're about to give people. We're going to dispense wisdom now. Question one comes from Teresa. Teresa says, my husband and I have a lot of travel destinations we want to see before we die. The pandemic has led him to becoming obsessed with traveling to space. This does not appeal to me in the least. With a limited amount of money and time, which do we choose? I don't want to smash his dream, but I'm also very attached to gravity and oxygen. Please help. I can't help. Maybe. And here's the thing is I read the news every day, Robin. Uh-huh. Am I missing something? Are people going to space on vacation?
Oh, yes. There is in the very near future. I believe it's SpaceX.
But right now.
But not right now. But it's going to happen in the near future that people are going to be able to travel to space.
I know and, that. But I mean, should this really be an issue in a relationship? Yeah.
That's a whole other story.
How soon are we talking about, you know, spring break on Saturn?
I would say this to Teresa. I mean, we all have a bucket list and space is on some people's bucket list, not mine, but it's on your husband's. You know, start small. You know, put that on the back burner, Teresa, like saying, okay, hubby, well, since we can't go to space today, it is something that could happen in the future. Why don't we take baby steps first and go places that will build up to finally
Saturn.
Going to Saturn for spring break.
Yeah, I guess if all goes well, the pandemic will, I'm hoping, wrap up by fall of 2021 to some.
Right, because the vaccine is out.
Yeah, because of the vaccine.
Right.
So what do Teresa and her husband know that I don't, where I can't imagine having a real issue and discussion because unless they were selling tickets right now, you know, as soon as the pandemic is, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right. So there could be a waiting list because believe it or not, you know, Tig, you and I are not going to be on that list.
No.
But there are people who want to go to outer space.
But is it prepaid where you have to sign up and prepay for your spring break on Saturn? Or can you sign up and then in the meantime, go to Bloomington, Indiana?
There you go. Or Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York?
Come on.
Okay, Robin is saying this because I sent her a video of Buffalo, New York. I sent it a couple of weeks ago, and when we got on Zoom today, you told me you just watched it today.
Right. Well, because it's kind of like homework, and I knew I was going to see you, so I waited because I wanted to be able to see you and say that I saw. But it's a fascinating place. But the point being, you're right.
So here's what I want to say: you need to figure out, Teresa, if you even want to go to outer space, because if not, your husband could start a little piggy bank with a friend who wants to go to outer space and they can go do that. And then you can you don't have to go with him. You can go to Buffalo and Bloomington, all the hot spots with your husband. And then he can go to outer space with a friend. Is that right, Robin?
Great advice.
Thank you. Let us know where you end up traveling. Whenever it is that traveling is safe again. So more questions after the break.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus. That's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science Versus on Spotify.
So, Robin, how old were you when you figured out what you did want to do outside of being kind? And this is relevant for our next question.
For as long as I can remember as a child, I dreamed of being a pro athlete. Mm-hmm. I remember whether it was being a bowling champ in Mississippi, playing tennis, basketball. It was when I was a freshman in college that I realized I was not going to be a pro athlete. And the reason I knew that is that there was a women's professional basketball league during that time. And as a freshman, we scrimmaged the women professionals and we kicked their ass. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was not going to be, if a freshman in college could beat the pros,
yeah,
I was realistic to know there's not going to be a pro league for basketball by the time I get out at Southeastern Louisiana University. And so it was my freshman year that I came to the realization, I'm not going to be a pro athlete. Okay, what is it about being a pro athlete? Oh, I love sports. I love travel. I love all. Well, what else can I do? Have an older sister who's a broadcaster, Sally Ann Roberts. She was the one who encouraged me. Why don't you take your passion for sports with your interest in storytelling and journalism, be a sports reporter, an anchor? And I was like, well, women don't do that. And I haven't seen any Black women doing that. And she was like, so just go for it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and that was when I was a freshman in college, because a little known story, I tried to drop out of school because I was disillusioned, didn't really know if this was going to happen, being a sports reporter. I was majoring in communications. And my second love is aviation. My father was a Tuskegee Airman, the first Black Flying Air Corps in the military.
Wow.
And I said, I'm going to be a pilot. And my parents were like, okay, we'll allow you to drop out and pursue this dream. But to do it, you have to go through the military like your father. So there's a test you have to pass. If you don't test that officer candidacy test, if you don't pass that, you have to be willing to go back and finish college. And I was like, deal. I failed that test miserably. I still to this day feel it was rigged because my father was in the room and I think like he was with his buddies like, at least I'd like to think that, but yeah. I was really good. So I went back to college, finished out, and it was then that I realized that, okay, I went to the local radio station, was a sports director, did play-by-play high school basketball, all these kind of things. And that's when my passion, I was like, oh, this can turn into something. This is something I want to do. And then I finished out school, majoring in communications, and was very fortunate to be able to get a position as a sports reporter in the Deep South as a woman doing sports.
That's so awesome. And I love that your parents were willing to make a negotiation and come up with some option that was maybe not exactly what the original plan was. It's exciting because it, as a parent, I think, oh, that's great. I have to always remember to be flexible.
My parents made it so it was my decision. It wasn't because they could very easily, because they were both the first in their families to go to college. Mm-hmm. And my older brother and my two older siblings all had at least a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
It's a big deal for our family to have a college education. And so for me, the little kid going like, I'm dropping out of school.
Yeah.
And for them not to panic and go, you're going to go and you're going to like it and say, okay, we're going to work with you. I think that is, I really appreciate how they approached that because it really set me on a really great direction.
I love that. Well, this leads us to our next question. Corey writes, I'm about to turn 36 and I still don't know what I want to do with my life. I've been a Korean linguist and a cake decorator. I've taken classes in horticulture and animal husbandry, and I've dabbled in woodworking, crochet, painting, and a thousand other things. I have a beautiful family and the most supportive husband, but I feel like I need purpose, help.
Wow, Corey, that she hit it right there. We all feel we need a purpose.
Yeah.
And that's really, but this is really cool. First of all, kudos to you for all the different things you've done, Corey.
I mean, that is
awesome.
It's a lot.
But I would ask Corey, I said, what is the common thread? What is it with all those things that you've done that you've enjoyed? What is it? Because it's kind of like how I wanted to be a professional athlete. It wasn't going to happen. But then I found a way. You dream big picture, but focus small on the day-to-day things. And I would ask her to try and figure out what is the commonality in all of those things that she is doing and try and find what it is. But I don't care if you're 6, 26, 36, 106. We all go through these times of what's my purpose. It's great with those people who from birth, they know exactly what they want to do, but the vast majority of us don't. So Corey, you need to know that it's cool that you're not quite sure because the vast majority of us don't. But this is what always got me, Tig, when a kid would come into my office and back when they could come into your office and they would say like, oh, I really don't know what I want to do. And they would ask for my advice and that. And I'm like, no one knows you better than you. I just met you. So I don't really know. So kind of take some time with yourself. What is it that you really want to do? And it's great to ask people such as myself and Tig, success leaves clues, but it's got to be, we'll offer some advice to you, Corey. And so will Tig. And I'm sure she'll have, Tig will look into her crystal ball and she'll have the perfect answer, but you have to personalize it and make it what's going to work for you. You only know what, your circumstances with your husband, your family, what's going to work for you, whatever advice that we dole out.
I couldn't agree more. And I think I'm very, really blown away and amused by all of the things that I'm reading that Corey has done. I mean, this is somebody who is clearly an open, interested, curious person. And that, I think, is really great to have in your personality. Also, you have a long list of, first of all, things that do not have a tie in, but who knows? You could probably find a tie in. I know you would be surprised, but what you do have is a really amazing long list of things you don't want to do. So that's a great start. But also what's striking me is the incredible interest and curiosity that I was talking about. And I would say, maybe you don't have the end goal that you want to focus too much on. Take your curiosity, your natural curiosity and ability to put yourself out there and do something like maybe it's a blog or maybe it's a book and write about your need to find out who you are at 36. You've done all these things. Each of these things could be a chapter in a book, or it could be an essay in a blog, and open it up to public discussion with friends, family, strangers, and really explore yourself and your interests. And I don't think it's common that somebody really looks into so many avenues. Would you agree?
It's so varied.
It's so varied.
There's something you said, Tig, that again, I go to my dear friend, Diane Sawyer, what she says to a lot of young journalists and everything, and even it can apply to what you said and for Corey, curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you go in with being curious, and she always talks about how curiosity always leads you to some, be curious.
Yeah. And I would say, pat yourself on the back for continuing to be so, because this is a curious person. This is a very curious person. And I would say if you never find the one thing that you want to do, your curiosity that has led you from a Korean linguist to to animal husbandry to crochet to painting, I would say keep going on your journey. And I would just say document it, write about it, talk about it. Best of luck to you, Corey, and thanks for writing in. And Robin, this next question is what I call a This is going to be a tricky one, and it involves loud neighbors. Amelie asks, a neighbor moved into my apartment building during the pandemic, and they are so loud that I already know everything about their personal and professional life, including breakups, Zoom work meetings, and their tumultuous relationship with their mother. I don't think they realize how loud they're being. How should I let them know?
Oh, this. Well, she just said it right there. She doesn't. Maybe they don't know.
Yeah, that struck me too. It sounds like they're not trying to be malicious. You know, some people are loud talkers and loud livers. And,
right.
I would say that probably being direct and to call back what Robin was saying, kindness, to be direct and kind about it is your best bet, because there's kind of no way around that unless you want to be indirect and write a letter. I don't know if it's a duplex.
No, let's not give that advice. Let's be direct. Let's say, because not to be confrontational, but sometimes people are just so not aware, especially during this time of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it sounds pretty detailed, everything that she knows about them.
Yeah.
So quite, but it's interesting that I'm giving this advice, and where we are right now, my partner Amber and I, a neighbor across, they play music 24/7. Now, for the most part, it's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Normally, it's really very soothing. They have a very great playlist. Yeah. But then there's sometimes that I'm just like, dude, just come on.
Yeah.
So I haven't done that yet, but this is what I'm saying. If I were to do that, it's the same advice I'm giving right here. Hey, look, first of all, my name is Amelie. Welcome to the neighborhood. Welcome to the building. I'm glad. Maybe bring a bundt cake. I am Southern. Bring a bundt cake.
Yeah.
And just kind of talk to them. And then you can decide from there how they react, what your next step would be.
I would think. No, that's great advice. Have you met your neighbors, the loud?
No, they don't make this. Is not about me. We're trying to solve. I'm not here to get to take advice. I'm here to give advice.
You better start making a bundt cake, it sounds like. All right, Amelie. It sounds like Robin has, she's got the answer and the same problem. So we'll be thinking about you, because we'll also be thinking about Robin. And I'm going to be checking up on you, Robin, to see how your bundt cake is looking.
That's what
I'm going to text you. I'm going to text you, how's your bundt cake looking? Robin, we've got our last listener question here.
Aww.
Yes. Sam asks, my nephew is 16 and goes to a rural high school with limited opportunities for artist endeavors. I know because I went there. He is interested in film, writing, and producing. How do I support him and encourage him to pursue his interests and suggest opportunities?
Sam.
It's really kind.
Yeah.
And thoughtful.
But it's really very thoughtful. And you know what I love about Sam? That he can empathize.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's been in that situation and he knows the feeling. And so just, you know, Sam, so share what was it that helped you pursue as you did? Was there somebody, did someone share something with you to help encourage you? And I know, because Tig, you and I are from, you know, grew up in a rural area. I would say, though, that you just don't know what people are capable of. We kind of think, oh, a rural area, they're not going to be into the arts. You don't really know until you express that.
Yeah, there's so many examples out there and that can really make somebody see themselves in somebody else or where they want to be. I know for myself, obviously, Roseanne Barr has gotten into her fair share of trouble and controversy over the years. But when I was in Denver, I remember I was watching like E! True Hollywood Story.
Right.
I was obsessed with stand-up, but I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think that was something in the cards for me. And it was just something I could enjoy in other people doing, but it was my big dream and fantasy. And I was watching and Roseanne came on and, you know, she was from Denver and I was living in Denver and I was watching this person that was, her story was making me feel like, oh, maybe I could go do an open mic. Maybe I could do this. And so I started going to comedy clubs after that, and I started watching comedy, and I got up on stage, and it was that actual E! True Hollywood Story that made me take that step, and it's because I saw myself.
Wow, great for Sam to hear, and I think this young man that he's referring—he just has to be able, like you, like Roseanne did for you.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be able to see himself.
Yeah.
This is why representation, and I know we say this all the time, but this is another example of why it is so incredibly powerful for someone to be able to see themselves in through the arts, through media, through you know, every aspect of our life. And I think this is another ringing example of that.
Yeah.
And so when somebody rolls their eyes next time someone says representation, remember the story. This is why we talk about it. This is why it's so important and how it could just really change the course of someone's life like it did for you.
100%.
I never thought I had to thank Roseanne Barr. Wow. All right.
Well, I tried to thank Roseanne and she was like, oh, yeah, cool. But Sam, best of luck to you and your nephew. And
your nephew was blessed to have you in his life, Sam.
For sure. For sure. Here. Robin, before we go, there's one last thing. And we need to name that thing.
Name that thing?
Name that thing. Here is where people write in when they don't know what to name their dog or their baby, and we name that thing for them. The catch is they must use the name.
And oh, come on!
Listen,
that's a lot of pressure.
So this comes from Mary. Are you ready, Robin?
From Mary, okay.
Okay. My friend B adopted a homeless cat with an enlarged spleen that was found wandering the streets of Jersey City. Initially, the cat was skinny and lethargic, so we called it Dying Kitty because we didn't want to get too attached. Now, after a few months, the cat seems perfectly healthy. What should we name that thing?
Ooh, okay. This is from Mary, the cat from Jersey City.
Dying Kitty.
Dying Kitty. I'm glad they didn't stick with that.
Yeah, that's so sad and terrible, Mary, that you called this poor animal Dying Kitty.
But let's not forget they rescued this dog, this cat. So they get kudos
of
for that.
Of course, kudos for that. But how dare you name this poor little animal Dying Kitty. Okay, so an enlarged spleen. I'm glad that we have this random piece of information.
Yes.
And wandering the streets of Jersey City.
Okay, not that I want this to be used, but I just can't get this out of my mind because of how Dying Kitty, that not dead yet.
Okay.
But I don't want that. I'm spitballing here.
You're spitballing. Okay, so we're going from dying kitty to not dead yet.
Which is improvement.
Yeah, that's an improvement. And then there could be dead inside. No, no, that's not an improvement. Okay, dying kitty to let's get death out of the way.
Okay. So let's concentrate on an enlarged spleen in Jersey City.
An enlarged spleen in Jersey City. Maybe this cat could be called an entire sentence. An enlarged spleen in Jersey City. The streets
are the initials of that.
ESJC. An enlarged spleen on the streets of Jersey. Okay. I've got it.
Okay.
We've got a spleen and we've got Jersey City. I say Bruce Spring Spleen.
It's brilliant.
Is it? Okay. Spring Spleen.
That's right.
But is it? Okay.
No.
Instead of Bruce Spring Spleen, how about just Spring Spleen?
I like the Bruce because if you don't have the Bruce before, you know what, you maybe don't know what the spleen strain is, but with Bruce, but it's a female cat, right?
I don't know. There's no gender here. Let's go with Bruce Spring Spleen.
Yes. I like that.
Bruce Spring Spleen.
Jersey. It's perfect.
You got an enlarged spleen in Jersey. You're Bruce Spring Spleen.
That is why you are Tig Notaro.
That is exactly why I am. All right, because, we did it.
Because you can put, I don't know about you, but I feel good about that.
I feel really good. Listen.
Better than not dead yet.
Yeah, it is so much better than not dead yet or dying kitty. This cat is going to walk away as Bruce Spring Spleen. Oh, that's a mouthful, but I think it. I think it's good.
I love it. I wouldn't change a word of that. But I've got to have the Bruce with it. That's fine. You're welcome, Mary.
Yes, Mary.
And has to name. I want to see a picture.
See. And you can't use Dr. Becky Hines. Okay?
No.
It has to be Bruce Spring Spleen. Okay, Robin. I adore you, and it's great to see you again, and I just really, really appreciate the time you took to be here today, and I know people are going to really appreciate hearing from you, so thank you again for being here.
Sure. Goodbye.
What's your heart?
Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Tracy Mumford, and Whitney Jones. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Eric Romani. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Marianne Ways. Production assistance by Nancy Hsu. Our theme music is Friend in Tig by Edie Brickell and Kyle Crusham. And Listen to Your Heart by Edie Brickell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana. And I'll tell Becky.
That's what you'll have.
That's what your heart is. Hi, I'm stand-up comedian and sex symbol Tig Notaro.
And I'm actor and writer Cheryl Hines.
Before Cheryl and I got into the big business of podcasting together, we were just simply friends.
And we're still friends. But now we talk about a different documentary every week on our podcast, Tig and Cheryl, True Story. So whether you love documentaries or just want to hear us slowly lose our minds, check out Tig and Cheryl, True Story, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, cool.